I'll do whatever my conscience tells me I must. That quote is from an interview with Dr. Cheryl Chasteen, defending the fact that she performs abortions. You're listening to the After Dinner Scholar, Wyoming Catholic College's weekly podcast about the great books and the liberal arts. I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. Last week, theologian Dr. Jeremy Holmes gave us an introduction to St. John Paul's 1993 encyclical, Veritatis Splendor, The Splendor of Truth. John Paul wrote that encyclical 25 years ago in response to trends in moral theology that for the most part denied that morality can be universal, objective, and permanent. He critiqued any doctrine that would, quote, grant to individuals or social groups the right to determine what is good or evil. Human freedom would thus be able to create values and would enjoy a primacy over truth, to the point that truth itself would be considered a creation of freedom. Freedom would thus lay claim to a moral autonomy, which would actually amount to an absolute sovereignty. Close quote. And where do humans determine good and evil? In their consciences. Dr. Kent Lesnowski is a moral theologian at Wyoming Catholic College and has for years been a student of St. John Paul II's work, and particularly his ethical writings. Dr. Lesnowski is our guest on this edition of The After Dinner Scholar. Dr. Lesnowski, Jiminy Cricket told Pinocchio, always let your conscience be your guide. Now, that's pretty good advice for life, so much so that we find it in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. What is the conscience, and what is its role in making moral decisions?
The conscience has everything to do with where the person is meant to go, what our telos is, and what the truth about the human person is. You know, Jiminy Cricket's right. It is a guide to that telos, to our unity with God. The way that John Paul II defines the conscience in this document, Veritatis Splendor, is as an act of a person's intelligence, the function of which is to apply the universal knowledge of the good in a specific situation, and thus to express a judgment about the right conduct to be chosen here and now. So you see, there's an act. It's an act of what? The intelligence. To what end? To apply a universal into a particular about what must be done. Now, the classical division of the conscience has been into three pieces. First is synderesis, the second is moral science, and the third is the judgment itself. First piece of conscience is that command that I must do the good. There's something in us that just says, I've got to do what's good here. Then moral science is that deliberation about what is the good in this particular circumstance. It's a practical moral judgment. And then judgment is that act of finally saying, not only must I do good, but I must do this good. And all of that tripartite system and that definition we heard from John Paul II is not about creating or coming up with or deciding what I must do as much as it's about discovering and recognizing the truth about what I must do.
So we have abortion doctors with clear consciences and adulterers with clear consciences and good people who, even after going to confession and receiving absolution, have bad consciences. What's going on with all that?
Well, let's take the first case, the person with the supposedly clean conscience. I think what we have in this case is a new understanding of what the conscience is that's operating for that person. The person in that situation may have an idea of the conscience as something that's creative, that has a fundamental kind of freedom to decide what is good for me or for you, or is a kind of self-authorizing power within me. So there's this idea that it's called the ethic of authenticity, meaning that if you're just true to yourself, as Polonius says in Hamlet, to thine own self be true, right? That if you just are true to yourself, you can't go wrong. And I think that folks that you described who feel a clean conscience, maybe they feel like they're being true to themselves. And perhaps they are, but there's a deep error at stake here that we can go on to talk about.
Well, of course, Polonius was the idiot in Hamlet.
Exactly.
Let's address the good people who have bad consciences.
So for the second group of folks who leave the confessional, as you said, and still don't feel clean or feel holy, I think there's a similar problem going on there. At times, there can be a kind of pride that says, my sin is so bad, I can't imagine that God would forgive it. So there's a problem of their conscience there, that they have a misunderstanding of God's goodness and God's power. And a second thing with those folks is that sometimes it's because they fail to forgive others. We find that if we can't forgive others, we're encased in that hate. And so if we can't forgive others, we can't accept forgiveness from God. And then thirdly, and I think most importantly for Veritatis Splendor, is John Paul II would say, there seems to have been a problem that this person didn't really meet Christ in the sacrament. And if you remember, he begins the encyclical with this discussion of the rich young man who meets Christ and experiences a call. And I think if our consciences feel guilty after something like the sacrament of confession, perhaps it's because we didn't actually allow ourselves to meet Christ there and receive his call.
In the encyclical, John Paul writes, "The judgment of conscience does not establish the law. Rather, it bears witness to the authority of the natural law and of the practical reason, with reference to the supreme good whose attractiveness the human person perceives and whose commandments he accepts." So is this about obeying conscience or obeying commandments?
I think we have to say ultimately both, because what I think John Paul II wants to emphasize is that the conscience, in as much as it correctly identifies the truth, It is its own command. It actually becomes a command that I must do this. And the person is compelled to follow their conscience, whatever it is that it's come to. And so we should say that it's not just rules, or it's not just choices or things like that, but rather there's somehow where the conscience creates, as I said before, becomes a command. John Paul II talks about the conscience as a dialogue with God. And so if we're hearing the voice of God in this inner deliberation, surely we would be obliged to follow that.
So in a sense, the conscience internalizes the moral law. Would that be a fair way to put it?
It discovers or recognizes that a law which sometimes feels external has always been in me and always been there as the primordial call from God to do the good and embrace the truth.
Okay, so it's not something external to me, it's internal, but I need to discover it.
Yes, and that discovery is only possible with, as John Paul II says, it's only possible to make that discovery with meeting Christ, whether in any number of ways.
Now, elsewhere in the encyclical, he says, "To the affirmation that one has a duty to follow one's conscience is unduly added the affirmation that one's moral judgment is true merely by the fact that it has its origin in the conscience." He's talking about something else there, right?
Mm-hmm. He is. He's, in the case you just mentioned, John Paul II is talking again about an erroneous vision of the conscience, which is alienated from truth, alienated from the idea that human nature has a specific end toward which the conscience points. He's talking about an error of the notion of freedom, which is to say I'm free because I choose and so that I can choose, rather than freedom being understood as the power to accomplish one's end. So there's those three big errors that he's referring to there in that case you mentioned.
Catholic theology talks about forming conscience. How do we form conscience?
Forming a conscience requires a number of virtues, one of them being prudence. And prudence is important in the formation of the conscience because it has three pieces. The first is to understand the truth of the situation. And the second is to with docility discover and listen to and figure out the best ways to achieve the end. And then finally, the third piece of prudence is to sit down and make that decision and move. So to form the conscience, we need prudent people. We need people who are humble. So they're docile to gaining good counsel. We need people who are attentive, that they care about the truth of the situation, getting beyond simply how they feel about it, getting beyond simply what it looks like, getting beyond even what I may already have an intuition about. So I think prudence is there. Also, to form a conscience, we need love, we need charity. Because if we don't have in our hearts the deepest desire as God and truth and goodness and beauty, we will find ways to achieve lower goods, and our conscience will not properly be formed. And so we'll make bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. By following our consciences.
Exactly.
Now, how does a correct view of freedom, conscience, and truth contribute to what St. John Paul called the new evangelization, particularly in light of the fact that his message is not one our culture wants to hear?
Our culture shows the deep desire people have for a sense of fullness or happiness, joy. There's a sort of inherent knowledge that whatever we're doing day to day isn't enough. I need something more. And John Paul II, when he talks about the new evangelization, he's talking about speaking into that realization that folks in our culture have. Finding a way to speak into that. Now, how do we do that with conscience? I think what John Paul II would say is that we must provide, first and foremost, supermodels, if you will. People who, by their very form of life, can't help but attract those around them. So that when they see a person confidently forming his conscience in docility and confidently acting out that conscience, regardless of the circumstances, there's a power, there's a beauty, there's an attractiveness to that integrity. And John Paul II would say that kind of witness begins conversations that eventually lead to meeting Christ. And when folks meet Christ, then they reorder their lives because of his invitation. Or they don't. And if they don't, well, that's part of evangelism too.
Mm-hmm. The rich young man being a prime example, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. One of the beautiful things about Veritatis Splendor is the way John Paul II is honest about the developments of modern theology and philosophy, as well as critical of its flaws. And one of the developments he's good to point out is our increasing consciousness of the dignity of the conscience, in that it's on a journey. The conscience is on a journey toward being rightly ordered toward God, and that we must address people where they are and call them up to be closer to Christ where they ought to be. Another thing he points out is it's right and good for us to note, again with the dignity of conscience, that there is something in people given from God, that in the conscience they do speak with God. But again, he's quick to point out that with both of these, when we mix them with a false notion of freedom that's unconnected to the truth, we end up becoming our own makers. We end up attempting to become our own gods. And that's where we're going to fall on our face as people and as a culture.
Because we're right back in the garden eating the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
And there it is.
St. John Paul II believed and taught, quote, "In the depths of the human heart, there always remains a yearning for absolute truth and a thirst to attain full knowledge of it," close quote. This gives us hope and makes evangelization possible, even in an age like ours. How? With this challenge to us all from the encyclical. The life of holiness, which is resplendent in so many members of the people of God, humble and often unseen, constitutes the simplest and most attractive way to perceive at once the beauty of truth, the liberating force of God's love, and the value of unconditional fidelity to all the demands of the Lord's law, even in the most difficult situations. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.